This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
Just back off the visit with Sid Sirewatch. Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. I'm just checking with Kay. Kay, you need Lenny's? You got Lenny's number, no? Or should I? Here, let me send it to you just in case. Sometimes. Because Lenny, I guess actually it's been... it's actually right about exactly... We've talked to Lenny subsequently, but it was a year... I'm pretty sure it was just a year ago, right about now, right? That AP Indy passed, as it happens. In this case, one of the individuals and operations in the sport that I know Lenny just held in the highest regard. Lenny Shulman, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. That's about how much anybody can stand of me is once a year.
I love it. I had a variety of people that crossed my mind immediately to bring on today, and you were right at the top, because you'd get glassy eyed talking about Judmont. And
you know, Steve, it's interesting, you know, being a racing fan and going to the track out in, you know, Hollywood Park once a week or whatever, you know, we don't think about breeding all that much, you know, necessarily, you know, horse players perhaps. But, you know, once I took the job at Bloodhorse and moved to Kentucky in 2000, it became obvious to me that I really had to get up to speed on breeding, you know, and this whole aspect of the business. And you know, you start to learn things, and you start to look at this Judmont organization that seemed to be the 1927 Yankees when it came to breeding, you know, relative to everybody else, and they didn't seem to go to horse sales to get their stock. You know, this wasn't like Darley and Coolmore, you know, spending $1 million. You know, for yearlings and $800,000 for broodmares every year. You know, this was an organization that somehow, you know, was doing this internally year after year after year. And it just struck me that the guy who's in charge of this must be a true genius of breeding. And you know, first thoughts are usually best. I mean, Prince Abdullah was just head and shoulders on an international basis beyond everybody.
We've talked already this morning. Sid riffed on you know, the breeding elements and the successes and you know, some of the decision making. Nick Luck earlier as well, more on the racing side. Lenny, when you would write features, and I know that for as long as I've known you, you're one of your white whales was a sit down with Prince Khalid. But you know, domestically we've had representatives like Doc Chandler and Garrett O'Rourke and Heedley Bell. You know, there's been this constant. Then when you fold in Bobby Frankel, and then most recently with Chad Brown and Bill Mott, Brad Cox, Bob Baffert, you know, that have all you know, late obviously in. You know, in the prince's life, you know, farmed out a wider array of horsemen. But you know, talk about the dealings and you know, the coming to understand, you know, the approach through Garrett and Doc Chandler and Heedley Bell.
Well, you're absolutely right, Steve. He was the one that got away, and you know, every time I would see Garrett somewhere or talk to him on the phone on another story, I would always say, yeah, Garrett, have you talked to him? Can we talk? And, you know, Garrett always called him the boss man. You know, well, the boss man's deciding this, the boss man's deciding that. but, you know, we'd always laugh because I would always inquire after whether, you know, I could possibly get a sit down with him. And I did do one interview with him, Steve, at the at Empire Makers Kentucky Derby. We found ourselves next to each other walking to the paddock earlier in that day. And here I was with him, and I turned to the prince and I said, are you having a good day here? And he turned to me and he said, pleasant. And so that was the interview I did with him. I did get one word out of him, but when I, which was an accomplishment, but the first time I interviewed Bobby for a big story, you know, obviously you have to ask the question, you know, which I did, is like, now, Bobby, here you are, a Jewish kid from Brooklyn, and here you are having made your name with the horses from a, you know, from a Saudi Arabian prince, you know, can you talk about the, you know, the irony of that? I we were eating Thai food in Los Angeles. He looked up from the food, he goes, hey, you know, he's under enough pressure, let's not talk about that, you know. So, you know, it was a very sensitive topic that Bobby certainly understood, but, you know, the prince had run a computer program to find out who to give his horses to in America. And, you know, Bobby ended up scoring the highest of anybody. And that's how we picked Bobby out. But, you know, Bobby loved all of his horses. But, man, when he would talk about or show you, you know, the Judmont fillies in his barn, man, that face just would light up. You know, the Honest Lady or Flute or whoever the current one was, boy, did he love those fillies. I mean, it was written all over him, and obviously Judmont meant so much to his career. And, you know, I told you earlier this morning that, I don't know if you have that clip at Sightseek at Keeneland or not, but, you know, she, you never know until they do it, and Bobby knew he had something special, but, you know, she hadn't run in a great at stake yet. This was maybe the fourth or fifth race of her career. And we were on the rail together at Keeneland, and Sightseek was in the Raven Run. And she came blazing by us down the stretch and, you know, ran off by 3.5 or 4 lengths. And I just turned to him and I said, whoa. And he said, yeah, you know, she might be all right, you know. which, you know, in Bobby talk was, yeah, I've got another superstar here. And sure enough, once she wins 7 grade ones and $2.5 million, and if she didn't hate Santa Anita so much, she would have added to that with a Breeders' Cup distaff. But man, they just kept coming and coming and coming, and, you know, they just meant so much to him.
I could not come up with that Raven Run. There's quite a few, and there's some that do go back, you know, into the aughts, but that wasn't there, and unfortunately, and I did dig around, and I even looked for her Humana distaff, which came, you know, the next year as well. You know, you think about Sightseek. I mean, here's a perfect example of some of the things we were talking about with Nick Luck. When you go through this litany of success, and a horse like Sightseek, where would she even fit in the top, you know, 75 of the horses that he, you know, that he produced or campaigned?
Yeah. Well, interesting enough, she's out of a mare named Viviana, who didn't really do much at the races. I think she may have made 95,000 at the races, but, you know, she ended up just throwing one after another. And, you know, Sightseek herself hasn't produced all that much of note, but, man, I will guarantee you that her daughters come back and produce like crazy, because sometimes that's just the way it seems. But yeah, where would she fit? I don't know. 7 grade ones and $2.5 million, and you don't even know that, you know, she would crack the top 10 or not. But just to be able to ask Prince Abdullah, what do you see here? You know, how do you know that this is going to happen? It would have been the most fascinating conversation probably of my life to know how he figured this all out, because this couldn't have been by accident. This isn't one or two mares that, you know, that went on and produced. This is scores and scores of them. And I hope that combination lock got passed on, you know, that this combination got passed on to somebody else, because it's, you know, that's too good knowledge to just go away with it without passing on to somebody.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, the group of advisors and, you know, with the input, but it seems like that's been a constant. But everybody referenced at the same time that he was the decision maker. It wasn't like he, you know, rubber stamped recommendations, that they, you know, they put something in front of him. And he said, okay, that, you know, that like, you know, like, like the Don with that jug of oil.
I think there's a reason why Garrett always referred to him as boss man. And, and the other thing that, you know, it wasn't a breeding decision, but, you know, after Bobby had passed and they wanted to honor him, you know that they had a decision to make as to, you know, what horse to name Franco in honor of everything Bobby had done for their American operation. And look who they picked out to give that name to.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, only one of the greatest racehorses of all time. And, you know, you have to make that decision, you know, when the horse is a yearling or a young 2-year-old. And, you know, this is not an accident. This guy had an eye and a judge for talent and breeding and everything else. It just supersedes anybody else I've ever seen.
Yeah, and what I always admired was just how consistent and really and placid there was never any hubbub or any the controversy or displeasure that was voiced. There was never a reason to say, I'm going to root against that horse. Or it just has been run with such a steady
class.
Hand.
Yeah. It's just class. Yeah. You're exactly. Absolutely right. You see those colors walk on to a racetrack, and you sit forward in your seat to see what that horse looks like and to see what the breeding is, because the whole thing is class all the way, you know, from the humans to the equines. You couldn't be more right about that.
Well, the concern I voiced this to Nick Luck earlier, and he was on his show this morning. He asked John Gosden, apparently. It seems like there is a survivorship scenario, because you can understand when we're dealing with something right now. In fact, with those two dispersals that we've talked going into the week and in these couple of days already of the sale with Paul Pompa and passing and with this with the Samsung team, winding down their operation. Those two scenarios, those are typical for dispersals. Obviously. Passing, an abrupt passing. But this is, there's nothing to even compare this to when you think about the international scope and, the importance. I mean, this is as important a racing operation as there is in the world, period.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think it was a sudden, quote unquote, a sudden passing. Certainly there had been rumblings over several years that he may have been in some failing health. So I think there was, certainly the opportunity to prepare as best as they could for it. So hopefully that's true. I can just tell you from a personal standpoint that when I, even when I got the emails from Keeneland about the dispersals coming, I still have not gotten used to Paul pump and not being here anymore. It's still just the chill runs up my spine when I think about it. It's so very hard and difficult to absorb that. And I know you had his cousin Jerry on this week. That hit like a ton of bricks, and it's still a ton of bricks. And it's just such a loss for the business, and it's just such a personal loss for anybody who knew Paul at all, from the smallest interaction to a closer interaction. There's nobody who came away from that not touched with what a great human being he was.
No doubt. And, you know, a passing like that, as well, frankly, as I'm sure people don't have the immediate connection or, you know, awareness. But Tammy Velez, her passing is really at the heart of Sam's son leaving the game. I mean, if Tammy had not gotten sick, it's probably 10 years. But if she was maybe 40 something.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, if Tammy goes on, you know, the Ernie Samwell's daughter, Sam's son, it wouldn't be dispersing.
Yeah. Well, at least hopefully the equine blood goes on. But you know, these are body blows to the industry. You know, these kind of operations don't come along every year, and obviously there's the personal aspect for those that knew them, but you know, certainly as an industry, it's a blow, and you can only hope that, you know, something like Judmont, you know, can continue on at the same kind of level that we've been spoiled to see through the years. Certainly the equine blood is there anyway.
Well, and there's obviously stories that will be written out of, you know, these results today. When quality broodmares, you know, that are the, you know, the result of careful breeding, like the, particularly you think about the, you know, the 21 Samson mares. And I mean, I read through the list of, stallions that these mares were in foal to. It's unbelievable. I mean, Warfront, Into Mischief, American Pharaoh, Candy Rides, Hardspun, Distorted Humor. I mean, there's going to be a whole, you know, 21 babies out of here that'll produce some things. But it part of the game's history is the introduction of these kinds of, you know, heritage mares into other people's operations. I mean, that
absolutely
that goes hundreds of years of that.
Yes. Well, the Ned Evans dispersal comes to mind.
Yep.
You know,
there you go.
Not too distant past, and I, you know, Arthur Hancock tells a great story because he bought a mare out of that dispersal. He had tremendous respect for Mr. Evans, and you know, I think it didn't work out immediately. The mare didn't produce immediately, and Arthur said, "Yeah, I could hear Ned Evans' ghost coming down from heaven, saying, Hancock, you don't need my help." But then subsequently, what was her name? Ghost Lady or Ghost Son? Anyway, you know, the mare started producing like crazy. I think maybe Air Force Blue is from that family or whatever. But, you know, that's a dispersal that was, what, maybe 10, 15 years ago. And, you know, that sort of broodmare band is going to go on. And, you know, you're right. You know, Warner Jones, I mean, there have been some amazing dispersals through the years of, you know, top quality stock.
Yeah, and that actually would be a fabulous topic for one of the, you know, for a bloodstock writer actually to, you know, to talk about the redistribution. That It's just one of the aspects of the game that's so fascinating, and that's what's so remarkable when the final chapters are written regarding Prince Khalid. The success in the breeding side and on the racetrack, they're gonna stand alone as an incredible, really an incredible testimony to him, to as I said to Nick Luck, to build this from zero, from nothing.
I don't even know what you compare it to, Steve.
No, there's nothing to. No, there's nothing to compare it to.
I mean, in other facets of business, it's like, it's like building IBM from nothing or Apple from nothing. It's on that level of excellence and towering above the competition and being able to, again, just do it internally, without having to go outside and annex other blood for the most part. It's just unmatched by anyone.
Yeah, and I'm calling it 40 years, but technically, if you think about him starting, getting a runner or two and then buying a couple of mares, and apparently the first couple of mares Eric Mitchell's got a terrific obit, as I've mentioned repeatedly this morning. I guess the first couple of mares weren't all that successful. So, figure 5-7 years, to sort of get oriented. And so really it's the last 30 years that he fashioned all this. And what I did was copy from several sources all of the Group 1 winners, Great Britain, Ireland, France, United States, Canada, Hong Kong, United Arab Emirates. And then I also found a section, most successful horses. So I've got it cataloged in a couple of different ways, and it's 7 pages. Seven pages.
It was almost ironic that Bobby Frankel's first Breeders' Cup winner was Squirtle Squirt, because once he opened the doors, the Bank Pills and the Intercontinentals, all the Judmont mares started coming through and winning Breeders' Cup races one after another for him. But it goes on. I just scribbled down some names, and it just goes on and on and on. Arrogate, I didn't even think about until later. Empire Maker didn't come to mind. He's the classic winner of the bunch, and he didn't even come to mind until you get finished with all the fillies and mares,
Well, exactly. With Bobby, obviously with Bobby, those are the ones you think about. Well, Lenny, I got two for you to choose from for us to play one more race. I've got either Intercontinentals, Philly and Mare Turf, or I've got the Arrogate's Dubai World Cup.
Oh, let's go. I think we got to go with the mare, right? Let's go with the mare.
Yeah, I don't blame you. There's a couple of things about that race actually that I can remember. I was in the paddock.
Was that the Arlington Breeders' Cup, or was
no,
that,
no, this is
no,
this
Bank
is this is Belmont, I went down to the paddock with Jimmy Toner, and I met Bobby Flay for the first time before this race. And watched and your man John Phillips,
uh-huh,
right, with Wonder Again,
right,
was in this race, and I think we ended up, even though I was an Intercontinental fan, I didn't think she could wire this field. This was a, you're going to hear the names. Case, we're going to play that 2005 Breeders' Cup filly and mare. So let me know when you're ready with that. You're going to hear a really nice list of filly and mare turfers in this. And you'll enjoy this. You'll also, it goes back far enough that we get to hear Tom Durkin doing his Breeders' Cup work. And I want to say that Bejarano, Rafi Bejarano, I think, rides.
And by the way, the horse that finished second, the mare that finished second, came back and won the race a year later. So,
The name, of course, that we can go ahead and frame that is Ouija Board, and this is, you know, this is the race that prevented Ouija Board from winning three straight. So,
and the horse that finished third behind Intercontinental would finish second to Ouija Board the following year. Filmmakers, so these were some solid. and Filmmaker had finished second to Ouija Board the year before. So yeah, these were some solid runners here.
This is a nice field. Let's listen to Durkin. Here is Prince Khalid's Intercontinental, Bobby Frankel, and a full house at beautiful Belmont Park, the 2005 Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare.
With some early speed, Flip-Flop is there. Riskiverse is in between those two. Wend is not far behind. Mona Lisa's forwardly placed today, but there goes Intercontinental out to race for the lead as they make their way for the first turn. So it's Intercontinental on the outside up for the lead. Wend is second, and Mona Lisa not far behind on the outside third. Riskiverse up close today, fourth toward the hedge. And then in between horses is Flip-Flop running along in fifth position now. On the outside, it's Karen's Caper. She's four wide round the first turn, running in sixth. Sundrop seventh, and On Hold on the inside. Ouija Board right there in mid-pack in this bulky field. She's running along in eighth position, not far behind is Wonder Again. And then on the outside, Filmmaker, now launching a bid from about 10 lengths out of it, followed by Lewis Line, favorable terms, and Angara trails the field. And very keen up front is Intercontinental, who's setting the pace here. Rafael Bejarano trying to settle her down, but she was able to negotiate a half mile in 48 and four-fifths seconds, even over this off-going. That's a tepid pace for these fillies. Up top, Intercontinental now being challenged by Wend as they race for the half-mile pole. Karen's Caper looms on the outside, right there running a third. Mona Lisa under a ride to stay up with the half mile to go. Flip-Flop continues to run on well. Ouija Board's only five lengths behind as they enter the far turn, followed by Lewis Line. Filmmaker is launching her bid. Wonder Again still about 9 or 10 lengths out of it. Sundrop threads her way through. Riskiverse is tailing off, followed by favorable terms, Angara, and Megahertz is way behind. Megahertz has been trailing way behind the rest as the field turns for home. Intercontinental still in front. And she shakes loose. Here comes.
Oh, ugh, the worst. Casey says he says they're the YouTube buffering the thing. It's not. No. Not right now. Now, here we go. Almost.
Good thing we know who won.
Well, yeah, I mean, she.
Coming down to the finish, and it is Intercontinental, clear by 2.5. Ouija Board and Filmmaker chasing her home, but it was a crafty ride by Rafael Bejarano, who gets this front runner home. Intercontinental wins it by length and a half. Ouija Board was second, Filmmaker was third, and Wonder Again was fourth. Where there is Intercontinental, usually a very willful sort. She just likes to toss her head about and resents being restrained at all. Bobby Frankel happy about the ride that Rafael Bejarano gave her today. It was a real crafty front-running ride that got her home.
Well, the
15 to 1, by the way.
Yeah, she was 15-1 and paid 32.20. And the thing about it is, you know, she came in hot. She had won. Boy, listen to these names. Pretty funny. She had won the Palomar at Del Mar in Labor Day weekend. Then she went to Keeneland and won the Galaxy Stakes, and then came into the Breeders' Cup. And really the only hiccup she had had through the summer, she'd won the Royal Heroine. She was third in the Maybe. She had won the Jenny Wiley. She had done very little wrong, but that shows you the kind of field it was. If she's 15-1, Ouija board was 5-2.
It's 2-1, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
She Intercontinental's out of Hasili, who we haven't even met.
Right. Exactly.
Another spectacular.
Well, and you know, it's funny because I brought up Dane Hill with Sid earlier today, and we were talking. We went through the bloodline portion of the story, and I brought up Dane Hill, and here's a daughter. Here's a Dane Hill daughter, Intercontinental.
Yeah.
This was a tremendous performance. She beats Ouija board filmmaker Wonder Again, Favorable Terms, Wend, I'd forgotten about Wend, Angara, Megahertz, Karen's Caper, Mona Lisa, Lua's Line, Flip Flop, Risk Averse, who really did not run well. And I'll have to ask Pat about Risk Averse that day. And Sundrop trailed. So not a bad field of 14 in that edition of the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf. Amazing. Amazing.
At a mile and a quarter, yeah.
Yeah, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Wonder Again and Filmmaker were my betting interests that day. And there's a lot of people you could check in. I always love, whenever Ouija board comes up, trying to remember this is 2005, so it was 2006. Were you at Churchill in 2006? I just remember Lord Derby in the press conference, and he was, you know, he had waited a long time to get a horse like Ouija board, and he just loved coming back you know, they said, "What are your plans for her?" Well, we're going to keep running. I'll try to win again. We'll try to come back next year. he was just delighted by. She was great. I mean,
Steve Megahertz, who was in the middle of that field, she finished eighth, was also trained by Bobby, and was a really tiny filly stature wise, and I just always remember the race that. I don't know if it was Del Mar or Hollywood, where she was head and head with a Lord de Seru filly coming down the stretch. And Tempestormo had been riding a lot for Bobby recently and doing really well. And he was on the Lord de Seru filly that day. And he, by mistake, you would hope, smacked Megahertz in the head with his whip coming down the stretch. And as you can imagine, Bobby was not real happy with that. I was in Hollywood a couple of days later when Kent's agent at the time, Tom Canoes, was trying to explain to Bobby why he shouldn't lose Kent's phone number going forward. To say it was an uncomfortable conversation for Tom would be subtly it. I'll always remember that about Megahertz, who was also in that race that day.
There's so many nice stories actually up and down that field. Hearing Wend's name and watching the race earlier this morning. I mean, there's a mare that I kind of forgot about, Claiborne Mott runner, and she had a nice career too. They're a filmmaker.
Yeah.
For Don Adam as well. Well, Lenny, we weren't going to do Prince Kali tribute without a visit from you.
I must say it's an honor to even be considered, because you're talking about just the top of the top there. So it's a huge loss. Thoughts go out to everybody connected with Judd Mont, certainly on this side of the ocean, starting with Garrett O'Rourke, but to all the people back in Europe also. And you just hope it goes on. Just a fantastic, fantastic life in this sport.
Lenny Shulman, everybody. And Lenny, we'll catch up with you down the road on a cheerier.
A year from now. Yeah.
Next year, exactly. We'll talk to you next January. I would tell everybody to visit Lenny on Twitter, but there's no point.
May you be buried in a snowbank. I do have, if I may.
Yes.
I do have a book coming out later this year called Head to Head. It's a compilation of interviews that I've done through the years in the Blood Horse, of which, you know, the Bobby Frankel one is certainly one of them. But it's a collection of about 45 interviews I've done. And so I hope to be coming back and chatting with you about that at some point.
Oh, without fail. And so another Lenny Shulman tome. And this that same company that put out Justify?
No, this would be University Press of Kentucky. Is
oh,
out.
Terrific. Terrific.
Yeah. Yeah. So very much looking forward to it. Very excited about it. A lot of great interviews, people like David Milch and Sam Shepard and Rick Pitino and Bobby and Bob Baffert and Tony Leonard and the whole section on the great women in the sport, like Helen Alexander and Charlotte Weber and Josephine Abercrombie, and just goes on and on. But Tom Durkin, so it's a really nice collection.
Excellent. Looking forward. I remember when you were pitching this. So I didn't realize it would be this close to, you know, to getting released. Well, Head to Head. It's called Head to Head.
Yes, Head to Head.
Head to Head. Lenny Shulman expanding his author page at Amazon and in bookstores.
With a forward by Pete Townsend, who did Face to Face.
Lenny, I will talk to you in advance of the release. When can people pre-order?
I think it should be out sometime over the summer, so I will let you know. Thank you.
All right. There we go. The University Press of Kentucky, who is such, thank goodness, is still around, survived them previous governor's regime in the bluegrass, and has been very kind to thoroughbred and equine authors overall. We'll stay here. We got 20 minutes to fill out the morning, and Ed DeRosa is standing by. Good morning.
To follow there, Steve.
Eddie, Lenny, I had him on a 6-5 hold too. We didn't even let him off the hook to run wild.
I'll certainly look forward to the book and echo your sentiments about the press making it through some difficult times with its executive situation.
Yeah. The previous administration was ready to, it figured that administration would be opposed to things like books. It made perfect sense. But it has survived. And when they have a sale, every so often they have this sale, I got books piled everywhere. I must order 3 or 4. Because the topics of that their authors have tackled are fascinating. I mean, they're obviously, you know, Kentucky centric, but there's I've gotten a lot of culinary there's a lot of culinary titles in the university press collection.
Hmm. Well, yeah. It's, make sure I see that next time they have a sale.
All right, I will send you. I'll send you a couple of links. Do you have a Judmont thought about Prince Cali before we do anything else?
Well, I mean, certainly to me, Frankel sticks out. Just you know, he came of age, so to speak, when I transitioned to Churchill from Thoroughbred Times, and that was the first horse I remember just appointment viewing, must-see TV for, you know, international audience. And, you know, thanks to ADW, those races were easily available. I've certainly heard my share of stories of people trying to hunt down the Dubai World Cup when that launched in the 90s and, you know, having to go to the Red Mile and all the red tape to get them to show it, et cetera. And Frankel just seemed to really elevate, you know, just beyond the, you know, certainly people enjoy international racing and they like to avail themselves to big and small events. But Frankel just, that was the first I remembered. You had to watch. Like if you knew horse racing, even if you were just a casual weekend warrior here in the States, he moved the dial. And for Judmont to be a part of that and having named the horse after one of our best trainers, and having Sir Henry Cecil involved, it's just kind of hard to imagine a more perfect storm in terms of what thoroughbred racing is in the world and was at that time. So that certainly sticks out. And I was there in 03 when the Prince was at Churchill. And I think Bobby Frankel swept the graded stakes on the undercard and unfortunately just couldn't get it done in the big one for the Prince. And I know that's probably one Bobby would have really have liked to have for a guy he won a lot of races with. So an incredible story and legacy in thoroughbred racing. And I can only hope it continues, because when you think about Judmont, it's not just what they did on the track, but the Broodmare Band and their commitment to breeding to race, et cetera. So we'll see what happens in the coming years, but hopefully the involvement will remain.
No, nicely put. A nice coda to our conversations today, and I'm sure there'll be more reactions as the week goes on. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on the Oval, and of course, one thing that I want to slip ahead. You know, we get these PPs, Ed, for fairgrounds so far out in advance. It makes it very easy to, you know, anticipate. And they're going to get the lion's share of the attention on Saturday. But as part of the action at New Orleans on Saturday with the LeCompte, you've also got the Kentucky Derby prep race season getting going in earnest, and an opportunity for players. I mean, we've done this in one guise or another the last several years.
Yeah, it's kind of what I was thinking. I mean, going back, we used to have the Showdown, Showviver type competition, and that lost a little flair when I think we had eight people make it to American Pharoahs Derby, and that certainly gave the insurers some cold feet going forward. So we've been, you know, trying to come up with ways to get a nice big number out there and keep people engaged throughout the prep season. And one thing we had never done is actually a promo that mirrored the points. So rather than looking for, you know, a mutual total or an ROI or things like that, this is basically you're wagering for real dollars, of course, but the bonus component matches the leaderboard and the road to the Derby. So, for instance, if you bet on the winner of the LeCompte this weekend at Twin Spires, you'll get 10 points for the leaderboard. And if you hit the Florida Derby winner, you'll get 100 points. And as always, you have to opt in, twinspires.com/offers. But with $150,000 in the purse and the grand prize, I believe, is $30,000 plus a trip to the Kentucky Derby, we have a feeling that this is going to be a popular one. It's big time real money up at the top, down to $5,000 for 5th through 10th place. And there's also a consolation for those who just participate. We're going to be giving away some wagers for Kentucky Derby Day. So lots of opportunity to pad the bankroll, but without a doubt, the biggest for those who play, $30,000 cash first prize and the trip to the Derby, which should be a hot ticket this year, because I don't think there's going to be 150,000 people there, Steve.
Well, that's funny you say that. I happened to have been talking to Alan Foreman yesterday, and we were speculating on that, and I was asking him how things were in Maryland, and he said not great. And I, you know, there some things are actually positive, but he wasn't sure what was going to happen on that front.
Yeah.
for Preakness, and because you know we're making steady progress, but not the kind that I think we were hoping for. So how do people explain to people how to get involved? I put a link up at the website last night, so you'll see that it's a $150,000 leaderboard competition is what you're looking for. But explain to everybody how to opt in.
Yep. Again, twinspires.com/offers. Some other good offers on there as well, but this one's the Kentucky Derby prep race, 150,000 leaderboard competition. Once you're opted in, you're good week to week. You don't need to re-opt in or anything like that. But it is important. It is a $25 minimum wager, so a little stretched from some of the typical $5, $10 promotions. But it's a straight win bet, and it's on your first horse that you bet to win. So no dutching, no taking the field or anything like that. And if you hit, win, you get the points corresponding to the Derby trail, but all the way down to fourth, of course, just like the points. So this weekend it's 10-4-2-1. And I have to think, based on the numbers we usually get in these, those fourth and third place finishes are definitely going to mean something. So don't miss a race and opt in. And $25 to win in for the prep races is is how you enter each week.
Nice, and we'll remind, and we'll start to look at the leaderboard as the prep trail unwinds. A couple of other things we should mention too. We introduced and let everybody know last week with Sam Houston getting started. There's the Build Your Stakes Day bankroll that's going on, and tomorrow we get the first opportunity to play the Sam Houston Space City Pick Six. No more jackpot, to their absolute credit, and 12% takeout, 50 cent, which is an interesting increment to introduce to a pick six. I'm looking forward to building the ticket tonight when I start to pull it together. And of course, we should mention Sam Houston starting at 5:00 Eastern on Thursdays. So you get that late afternoon, and the sequence will start at 6:56. So a little before 7 for the Space City Pick Six. No more jackpot, but you bet $100. Every time you bet $100 on Sam Houston leading up to Ladies Classic Day, they're going to throw $5 in, up to $50. So 10 opportunities to get $5. You'll have $50 waiting for you on Ladies Classic night.
Exactly, yeah. And 50 is a decent amount. And speaking of 50, I agree with you. They threw a little bit of a curveball. They got rid of the jackpot, but also increased the minimum. And that's definitely going to factor in, how the pool is played for sure, because now those $144 20-cent pick six tickets are suddenly $360. And, I think just knowing my own play as I do and our peers and how they play, Steve, there's definitely that sense with the pick five, pick four waiting for you. I don't know that people are going to play the tickets maybe they should to try to take down a nice pick six pot, because if I miss here, I can come right back, and same with the pick five. So I definitely think there might be some opportunity for those willing to press on the pick six and not worry about the other two pools and not see those as sort of hedge or backup opportunities. One thing I'm not sure of, probably find out, but you might know, are they doing like NYRA and it's paid out every day, or is there a traditional carryover opportunity?
Oh, there's traditional carryover, which would be 75% would carry if nobody hits. And the conso structure is 25% of the pool will go to consos.
Got it. Okay. Well, then that should provide additional opportunity going forward.
Yeah, and if you haven't looked yet for tomorrow, you've got a nice sequence, actually. It's 10 by 7, by 10 by 10, by 8 by 10. Quality-wise, quite nice. You got a three-year-old turf mile, starts things out. A non-winner's a 2. And then it goes to a straight mile dirt allowance for 4 and ups. That's a group of 7. Diodoro's got a 7 to 5 favorite in there. Then there's a nickel claimer, non-winners of 2 on a calendar basis, goes as the 7th. You've got they're going to go a mile. You're going to go a mile with another nickel claimer. And then a 7/8, 15,000 non-winners of 2 with 8. And the nightcap is a maiden special for fillies and mares, 4 or 5-year-olds going a mile on the grass. So the first and last leg are on the grass. And in between, you've got, a nice sequence. A very, very nice set of races, looks like, for tomorrow. And I'm going to go after it. And, Ed, we should mention we brought you back on Friday. And we talked about that Turfway sequence, which ended up paying $4,700. I mean, there was one very tricky horse, the Perry Utes winner, for $40. But talk about that Turfway action Friday night.
Yeah, that was the key. I mean, it was pretty formful, and obviously it seemed, even beyond that night with the Perry bomb, it's those big prices that are sticking out. But as I've shared with sort of the favorite percentages and things like that, there's plenty of very logical winners at Turfway as well. And until Saturday, betting the favorite was actually a positive proposition at Turfway. It's just a matter of, finding the right place to lean and getting creative and where your opinion isn't strongest. And unfortunately for me, my stronger opinions have not come through. So it's, some futility as of late there, but you see those payouts and, it's encouraging because, man, when I do connect, it's going to pay. And that seems to be the case even on Friday night when I thought the other four were very haveable and indeed did, but that Perry one eluded me, and it's not as if I didn't try some prices and other combinations and races. That was just one I couldn't connect the dots with, and for those who did, $4,700 for an otherwise logical sequence, kind of pretty much the mode of what's been going on at Turfway this year.
And almost 400,000 bet into it as well. So the number we suggested basically hit, and very, very playable. And actually, just so happens yesterday I had Ben Colebrook on, and we were talking about the horse that he and his dad sold opening day at Keeneland for $475,000, the short yearling. And then we also talked about his upcoming runners and did kind of a barn tour. And he says that the racing at Turfway has been cutthroat. I don't know if he used that term, but he said, he's entered some spots where he did not expect the level of competition. He said the racing has been really good. So that continues.
I'm friendly with Jeff Greenhill from the Mac the Man days. And last year talked about, when Turfway was really just kind of the first year of the improvement following Slots Money, et cetera. And, he knew it would be tough, and he posted on Facebook today or yesterday, he's 0 for the year so far. And, he and I had to chat, and I mean, he basically said what it sounds like Ben said, it's a totally different meet from 2 years ago. I mean, just a total different population and competition. And, we'll see who's able to adapt, because I don't think it's going to get any easier.
No. Well, a couple of got about 2 minutes. A couple of plays for today.
I don't have anything today, and I just started looking at Turfway tomorrow. But since our big promo kicks off at Fairgrounds, and I'm guessing I won't talk to you Friday. Hopefully,
well, you might
or other will be back. But I did want to quickly touch on the Silver Bullet Day, where I like Charlie's Penny quite a bit, and certainly recognize Sun Path is the filly to beat. I expect Super Sensational will probably take some money as well. Minute Waltz, if Rigney goes into the pocket, could take some win money. But I think the value is going to be on Charlie's Penny. I thought the last race was good after an odd start. And Brian sticks aboard. And that debut, granted it was going five, and he's by race day out of a Warriors Reward mare, so a mile and 70 might be the limit. But I think there's a fast enough race to run back to and maybe a wake-up at two turns. To me, it makes Charlie's Penny the play. So it's a win bet for me on her and underneath Sunpath and a straight Exacta.
Excellent. Do you have a feel for the LeCompte yet?
Yeah, I'm going to take a shot with Santa Cruiser. I think this is way more than just Mandaloon, and he's kind of marooned on the outside. So Santa Cruiser is going to be the play for me, see if Jimmy Graham can get this one gate to wire or close to it.
Excellent. EJXD2, everybody. Eddie, I appreciate it, and maybe we
My
will...
pleasure.
Not at all. If we don't talk Friday, we'll talk next week. Ed DeRosa, everybody, along with Lenny Shulman, Sid Fernando, Adam Koenig, and Nick Luck. Busy full Wednesday. Good luck if you're playing today. A few more options on the betting menus. Gulfstream, of course, today in Tampa. Delta. Oh, I should mention the that favorite was tough yesterday in the Jewel. The Brad Cox Australasia won by half a dozen. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9. If you missed anything, archive, podcast, etc. Back with you tomorrow, Thursday edition, at the races here on Sirius XM. Good luck, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
With Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.